The Talk of Mid-Maryland, 930 WFMD.
This is the 930 WFMD Weekend Free Talk Express, featuring highlights from local talk shows with your host, Bob Dacey.
Hello, I'm Bob Dacey, and welcome to WFMD's Weekend Free Talk Express, where we revisit some of the best talk shows we have on the air for the past week. So let's sit back, relax, and listen to what we have in store for you on this week's show.
For this week's edition of Weekend Free Talk Express, WFMD's weekly news magazine on the air. Now let's take a look at some of the stuff that we're going to be giving you today. We have Tim and Frank talking a little about taxpayers and how much they're paying versus government budgets versus spend it all. Right now we're getting into that point in time when it's, time for governments to start thinking in terms of what they want to ask for tax money for next year, and that's what we're going to be looking at. We introduce you to the newest member of the law enforcement area in Frederick, a little guy named Duke, who, believe it or not, is able to sniff out metal and hiding places where bad guys might hide their goodies and stuff from drug transactions. And Tim takes up the arguments of how much do we need supervision of school books? Well, maybe he thinks we need a little bit more, because there are opportunities for teachers and educators to make decisions that maybe parents wouldn't make on what their kids can read in a school library. But we're going to start off with a tearful closing, maybe. The last Sears and Roebuck Company store in the state of Maryland was here in Frederick, and it'll be closing on the 15th of January. Think back, for those of you that have been around, the history of the Francis Scott Key Mall since it was built in 1978, some 45 years ago. What, another closing coming now, another department store going out of business. So without further ado, let's get started on this week's edition of Weekend Free Talk Express.
Sad, sad state of affairs. And it's a legend, a legacy. I don't know what you want to call it. An icon, Sears, is closing its doors finally.
Yeah.
Once and for all.
Yeah, they're one of the last Sears stores to close. Many have closed around the country. It's really a testament to, you know, the power that online shopping, the convenience, and, you know, the state of the economy. The world is changing rapidly, rapidly.
Yeah, and, you know, I remember my mom taking me to Sears downtown Frederick. And this is weird. I remember hiding in the clothes, you know, the little things where they stand out and they have the clothes hanging off of them. I hid in there as a little kid. Mm-hmm. And then going out to Sears and, you know, out at the mall. And you could get everything there. I mean, you know, you get the Craftsman tools. You could get the blue jeans. You could get everything at Sears. And then just all of a sudden, it was like nobody wants to shop at Sears anymore, which is a shame. I mean, it was a great store. But then you go through it, and you're like, wow, it's like a ghost town here. Yeah. But that was kind of happened with malls all over the place. I'm hoping that eventually we get back to, hey, malls are cool again.
Yeah, unfortunately, probably not. According to the Frederick News Post, the entire Francis Scott Key Mall had about 192,000 visitors in November. That's kind of low, given a 30-day period. Sears ironically opened in the Depression in 1925 in Chicago, and it closes during what I still think is a recession. I don't have any hardcore proof. Although that didn't stop the Democrats, did it, when we had back-to-back GDP quarters that were both negative in nature. But, you know, as far as Sears goes, this is a company that in the 1800s was a mail order company. Right. And then they offered a catalog, and then they grew to stores. And there was when I was young, there was a Sears store on every single corner. You couldn't go anywhere without seeing a Sears store.
Well, you know, the other thing is that, I mean, you know, when I was a kid and you grew up, you know, your parents handed you the Sears catalog and you looked through it to find out what you wanted for Christmas, you know, to make the list for Santa Claus. You know, that was great. I mean, I'm trying to think of the other great stores out there that, you know, that are Kmart's no longer around. And then,
Kmart is around. There's only three Kmart stores open in the United States. So Kmart and Sears are one and the same, because Kmart acquired Sears in 2005.
Yeah. Well, they had Montgomery Wards, you know.
Did you have a Bullocks out here?
No.
Okay, so I grew up around Bullocks, Macy's, JCPenney, Sears, Kmart.
Penny's still there, isn't it?
Yeah, Penny's is still around.
Yeah, I love Penny's, yeah.
Yeah, I do too. And you know, I had a $50 gift card for Penny's laying around for like a year and some change. So I finally decided to use it. And I was thinking to myself, great, I'm going to get a shirt, pair of pants, maybe some socks. No, I got one pair of jeans for $49.
Wow.
It is expensive. I couldn't imagine outfitting a family of five or six now. You're probably, I mean, if you're not doing hand-me-downs, you're definitely going to discount stores. But even discount stores are not discount stores anymore.
No. And then the hand-me-downs, well, you know, a lot of things now, I mean, because I did the storage units, I sell stuff online, pants that, you know, Levi's, I got Boss jeans, stuff like that. But there was another store, Ryan, that it was the friend of all men at Christmas time.
Big and Tall?
No, Service Merchandise.
I don't know that store.
Yes, well, Service Merchandise was out on 40, and it was great for guys to go in there and buy their wives some kind of a tool to use in the kitchen. Or a vacuum cleaner, or whatever you needed, man. Service Merchandise had it, and on Christmas Eve, it was full of men. That's where my dad would go. That's where I would go. It's where all men would go to find that tool, the little woman needed back at home.
Wow. And you know, watching Sears fall from grace makes me realize just how much the world is changing. Sears at one point was the largest retailer in the world.
Yeah.
The largest retailer in the world. And now they're closing their store in the Francis Scott Key Mall. The last day for you to shop there is January 15th, the location in the Francis Scott Key Mall.
January 15th.
January, what did I say?
Yeah, no, you said January 15th. Yeah, I thought it was December 15th.
Yeah, the location in the Francis Scott Key Mall is the last one in Maryland. So go ahead and take it. Yeah, it is sad. 6:30 at WF.
Now, if you're ready, we will begin.
Let's go!
Now, Mid-Maryland Live.
With Tim and Frank.
On 930 WFMD.
What kind of books ought to be in schools these days, in the libraries? Let's listen to Tim and some parents who are starting to talk in terms of, are we giving the kids the right kind of reading materials?
Tuning in, thank you. Appreciate it. We'll take you home, take you to work. Often referred to, what, Frank, as the Uber of the airways. Okay, here's what I'm talking about. Freddie County, our news, WFMD, award-winning news, by the way. I like to give them a pat on the back, you know. They pick on me, but it's okay. I got broad shoulders. But anyhow, our award-winning news, locally, you know, we just had a very contested, that makes sense, political race here in this county for all kinds of positions. We know that. It was a contentious is the word, not to which, contentious conflab wherein we had two sets of groups running for the Board of Education. And I say that because one was called the Education Not Indoctrination. And what was the name of the other group? Did they have a name, the other slate?
Students First.
Students First, I believe. Okay. Yeah. Or Apple Ballot or something like that. But anyway, whatsoever there, there is on our news the information regarding at least 35 books that are now located, as I understand, in our public school libraries, which don't sound to me on the outskirts of this, on the outer, that we really should have those types of books in school libraries. Now, don't get me wrong. If it's a medical school, maybe you would have different books if it was, but we're talking public schools. Where I think high schoolers from ninth grade up can go, I don't think they have separate libraries for seniors and juniors. I think it's one library, I would think, unless they have a section. You can't go past this line if you're a freshman. Get away. No, I don't think that happens. And I think some of the books that have slid by don't. Again, this isn't about books, banning books or burning books. It's about allowing proper locations of books. Nobody's for burning books. I think that would be a crime. But as far as where you place books, for example, you, in my opinion, you wouldn't have books on erotica that would be necessary to be in a school library. Well, you could go to a public library and it could be there. I mean, you know, and if the student wanted to go down to the public library, you know, and get it, that's a different story. But I do believe there is right and wrong in this, because I would hope you would not let your children read inappropriate material or watch inappropriate movies. You know, it's not censorship. It's called correct parenting is what it's called. It's not censorship. And if little Johnny or little Jane go out and they find stuff, you know, as, you know, I don't want to tell them myself because I'm a statute of limitation. I'm still a young person. But, you know, when we heard about books growing up or did you read this book? And we it would make the circuit, so to speak. I mean, we'd all talk about or hear about it, not even necessarily find a book if it even existed, But, you know, pornography and erotica has been around forever, will be. It's just that where should it be available? Where should it be accessed by students? My humble opinion is the school library is not one of those places. I find it disturbing because, again, you know, young people are curious. And there's nothing wrong with curiosity other than the poor cat. But I think there is a time and place for everything. You don't teach a first grader, you know, fusion vision physics. You don't do that. Way over their head. Nor would you teach a first grader, you know. I would think, you know, I'm trying to be as family popular as I can be here, whatever. You wouldn't teach them other stuff. Fair enough. What do you have to say about this? Are we wrong or am I wrong? Should this be open to the discretion of the public schools and the students?
Free talk for four states. From Frederick, 930 WFMD.
Police have all kinds of things at their disposal now, and the latest is a metal-sniffing dog named Duke. Listen to what his job is going to be in helping local authorities slow down a drug trafficking problem.
WFMD, well, one of the newest and one of the best new employees of Freddie County State's Attorney's Office paying us a visit here to the Morning News Express, and we're talking about Canine Duke,
yeah,
and his handler,
and such a critical job he does, Bob.
Yeah,
such a critical job.
So
he does.
I guess I we need to kind of break down what he does do, because I know we've all heard, you know, drug dogs, and there are dogs. I saw a dog the other day. We were at Mission Barbecue, and there was a dog sitting there, and mm-hmm. My granddaughter Kayla, of course, being two, wanted to go pet this puppy, and I'm like, look, you can't pet. He's working, and she didn't understand that. And then finally, they're like, he's fine. He was a diabetic dog. His daughter has diabetes, and so the dog is there to, I guess, the sugar, you know, up and down, and so that's what that dog is for. So there's so many dogs are so keen on their nose, but a dog that has to be used for metal, that's kind of an interesting electronic thing. So are we talking, like, I mean, some people say a bomb sniffing dog, but is that what Duke does?
So Duke is trained to find the odor of triphenylphosphine oxide, which is going to be coated on the circuit boards of all electronic devices. It's a little different than your arson and your bomb dogs. It's the same general principle. It's just a different odor that he's imprinted on.
Does the Frederick County State's Attorney's Office have another dog like Duke, or is he a rarity?
So Duke is very much a rarity. He is the second dog in Maryland to be an electronic detection dog.
Mm-hmm.
He is number 93 to graduate from this academy class.
So tell us why the Frederick County State's Attorney's Office needs a dog like Duke and what role he plays in taking child sex predators off the street.
Sure. So Duke and I are now a part of the Frederick County Cybercrime Task Force. It's made up of local police as well as we have federal partners as well.
Mm-hmm.
So Duke will go out on all of their residential search warrants and we'll go in and we'll do a search of the house and he will run through and see what electronic devices he can find.
Wow. And you said he can't detect the explicit material on the devices. That's up to the actual physical human investigators. But he can detect where they're located and where are some places that people may hide these devices, mm-hmm. because they know they're doing wrong and they know the police may be coming for them. So they're hiding it in places probably we can't even imagine.
Right. So Duke's only – we've only been out back for about a month and a half now. We've done two search warrants. But in various places that I've seen them hidden, as far as other handlers and other jurisdictions out at training – they've been hidden behind switchblade covers, you know, outlet covers.
Mm-hmm.
They've been hidden in cigar humidors. It's just kind of any place that you can hide them that isn't obviously noticeable.
Right.
And places that are easily overlooked. I mean, you know, think about a plate cover for an outlet. You mm-hmm. know, when you do a search warrant, not everybody's going to go around and take every plate cover off of every outlet in every house.
Right.
So that's kind of where he comes along, is he can run right by it and say, oh, there's something, or maybe no, there's not something.
Mm. Bob?
That's just so interesting that's part of what he is supposed to do. And I just see he's an English lab, right? That's a little different than what we're used to over here in the States.
Correct. So he is an English lab. There's two types of labs that you'll see predominantly, and it's going to be the English lab and the American lab. The biggest difference I'd say is more their physical appearance. The American lab is going to be more wound up, and as you can see here in the studio, Duke is just taking it easy laying down. so there's minor differences, but there is differences.
He is a cute dog, and right now we're streaming this interview on Facebook. Oh. You can look at it, Facebook, WFMD. We're talking to Justin Walters with the Frederick County State's Attorney's Office. His canine, Duke, is in the house, and this is a very special dog. You would think these dogs are more common than they are, but there is not a lot of them, 100 in the state. Now, this indicates a larger problem, or something that we need to talk more about, is the problem of child sex predators. I mean, they're rampant. We get releases from Charlie Smith, the Frederick County State's Attorney, and the Sheriff Chuck Jenkins all the time. I mean, how big is this problem? How busy are you guys right now in the Cyber Crimes Task Force?
So the Cyber Crimes Task Force was created in 2019. Since its inception, there's been about 106% increase in these types of crimes.
Wait, say that again. 106%.
Correct. And I think, you know, COVID probably played a pretty large role in that number.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, the FBI estimates anywhere from 500,000 to 750,000 sexual predators online any given day in the country. So
wow,
yeah, that is sickening, Bob, to be honest with you.
So I love the fact that, you know, I'm watching the stream now, and if you go to our Facebook page, 930 WFMD, whoever's filming it, show us the dog. I don't want to see Ryan's bald head. Show me the dog. Show me the dog.
Show us the dog, Braden. Show us the dog.
So the reason why I say that, dog. Now, see, he's just chilling right now. And so is there, I mean, I don't want you to use the command word, but he, you know, because we're a building full of electronics. We've got hard drives everywhere. We've got electronics everywhere. But there's something that you tell him that he has to do for him to go, okay, time for me to work.
So Duke is no dummy. He will not work for free. He likes his food. So he is a food reward dog. So that means that when he finds a device, that he gets his food. He gets his payout. You know, you'll see him sit, and that's kind of my alert to know that he's found something. And then I'll tell him to show me. And he'll actually point his nose where he believes the odor is strongest.
Wow.
And usually, most of the time, he gets very close.
Now, how do we get these dogs trained to kind of separate, you know, drugs from bombs, from devices? What is the initial training? And you said food incentivizes these mm-hmm. dogs, but how do you bring them up to detect just one thing? You're trained to detect metal devices, and that's it.
So it starts out with them being imprinted on an odor. It's all about odor.
Okay,
that's what they find. That's their cue because they have so many sensory receptors in their nose. So Duke was imprinted on this specific odor, triphenylphosphine oxide. And they start out by getting just a big bottle of the chemical and teaching them to find that odor, and then working up to smaller devices where you see as your cell phone.
And it's that time of year we're starting to talk about budgets and how little money everybody has. Budgets and spending. Tim has some thoughts about how that all happened when he worked for the government. He doesn't think it's changed.
Today, I'll start off the program here shortly, and I usually give you a monologue that lasts anywhere from a minute to 2 hours, but it has to do with, you know, we as taxpayers, and I'm assuming you're a taxpayer, I mean, everybody pays taxes one way or the other, we seem to always be bombarded by parts of the government that want more money always. It would be nice if there was a budget year came around and agencies within the government said, you know, we've got enough money from, you know, what we got last year. We don't need an increase. I don't think that's highly likely because being a former government employee, feds, state, county, and city, I worked them all because I couldn't keep a job. But it seems to me it would be so great. It would be so appreciated if the government agencies would simply say, no, we have enough. And when I talk about agencies within the government, I'm talking federal, but I'm also talking state and county. I mean, wouldn't it be nice if let's see, fire and rescue or public safety said, you know, the money you gave us last year is perfect. Just give us the same amount this year. We can handle it. You know, in the federal government, I saw things that were so wasteful. And I may have been in the only agency in the government where waste occurred. I'll accept that. But when it came around to budget time, or preparing for the new budget, I think went in October. Well, the months leading up to that, we were told, instructed, if you will, to, get rid of things so we can buy new things. Now, when I was with the federal government, it was the new age of computers. That's right. We had all brand new computers, beautiful computers. And we were learning how to operate them. I could play solitaire and Mahjong, all those things. But we were told as it got closer and closer to budget time that we should really be putting in for new computers because they were a year old. And that if we didn't need any, then we weren't going to get the same amount of money that we had in the previous year. So I remember watching as government employees were taking computers and placing them in dumpsters. And there must be a big rule in the government that if you have something that is no longer going to be used by the government, that you can't really have it. No, you have to put it in the dumpster. So that the next year, when time came around for budget, we need new computers and, you know, we don't have them. We need to replace them because they're already in the dumpster. Well, I always thought that was kind of wrong. I guess as a department heads or agency heads, this is the way you, increase your budget, ask for more money. And yet, I can tell you from firsthand, there was nothing wrong with the equipment that was being thrown away. Now, I'm going to get this all the way down to your local level. You may be in Washington County, you may be in Hagerstown or Brunswick, Cleveland. I don't know where you are. If you're listening on WFMD.com, you could be anywhere.
That about wraps it up for Weekend Free Talk Express. We hope you enjoyed some of the interviews brought back from this past week's broadcast on Free Talk WFMD. Join us again next time. Until then, I'm Bob Dacey.
Past editions of this program are available in the audio vault at WFMD.com, a service of Holtzapfel Heating and Air Conditioning.